countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal. Follow our new Weanling Watch series for expert analysis and commentary from thousands of cattle sales weekly. Countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal, bringing 295,000 readers the latest farming news and the best of rural Ireland weekly.
Good morning and welcome to the programme. Coming up between now and 9 o'clock, we experience the joys of social farming in Mayo, highlighting men's mental health in rural Ireland, Eyes Down Bingo is back, and the new director of Chagask, Frank O'Mara, live in studio.
Text 51551, email countrywide at rte.ie and tweet at RTE Countrywide.
But first, Ag Mental Health Week begins tomorrow, now in its second year. It aims to bring the global farming community together to talk about mental health. There'll be daily tips, a special walk next Wednesday, and starting tomorrow, there'll be an international panel discussion on aspects of mental health, all live streamed on Facebook each evening at 7 p.m. at Ag Mental Health Week. Thomas McCarthy will be speaking on Friday evening. And in May of last year, his father, 59-year-old Paddy McCarthy, died by suicide. This week, I met Thomas on the family farm in Ballinadee, County Cork, and he began by telling me more about his late father, Paddy.
So Dad was a very hard-working man. He loved farming. He loved being outside. He loved music. He loved having the crack. He enjoyed going into Kinsale every weekend, dancing. Like he was mad into music down there. He was a very happy person. Always cracking jokes. Like the life and soul of most parties. And he really didn't take himself too seriously. But he loved what he did.
And was he farming all his life?
He was, yeah, from a young age. So he grew up in the house there behind you, actually. And he was farming since he was young. And I think he had a massive passion for it. And, you know, he loved it, but it's just hard, you know.
Yeah. What sort of a farm?
So it was beef and tillage. But last year we sold off all the cattle. And we have most of the farm rented now. And we have a few acres held back for ourselves for rescue animals like donkeys and goats and sheep. Because my older sister Anna, that's kind of her passion. So the majority of it is rented.
And so your dad farmed here all his life, tillage and cattle, on his own, yeah, here, was he?
On his own, but like his father would have helped him until he kind of got too old. And then his brother, Donny, our uncle as well, he'd always help him as well. And then the four of us, whenever we could, when we were younger, we'd be doing odd jobs around the place. So he wasn't really kind of alone until, I suppose, we all went off for college or for work or moved abroad, and then I think he was more by himself.
And what sort of music was he into?
He loved Bruce Springsteen. There's a band called Kincaid and a band called Crazy Chester. He just loved the music, especially Kinsale, like the dancing and all that.
And then tragedy struck the family here. When was that?
The 1st of May last year. Yeah, so he took his own life. I think it was 11 o'clock in the morning or around that time. In the middle of the height of the first lockdown, the pandemic, so that's when he did it.
And how much of a shock was it? Was there any indication at all that he was unwell or...?
No, like, I think, you know, looking back, everyone probably thought it was just lockdown and, you know, you could say that everyone was feeling a bit, I wouldn't say depressed, but they're just sick of the lockdown, sick of COVID. So I think, you know, maybe people might have thought it was that, but there was no indication. He never spoke about his mental health. He never asked for help. He never let anyone know that he was feeling suicidal or feeling down in any way. So it was a real massive shock. None of us saw it coming. He was private about those kind of, you know, his mental health issues. He never spoke about anything ever. So that's why it was so shocking.
And what do you think drove him to do what he did?
Well, he suffered a great loss when he was an identical triplet, and his brother passed away when they were, I think, the age of 7 in front of him in a farming accident. And my other uncle Gus, who's still alive, he dealt with that trauma. He got help in his 30s. He spoke to counsellors and, you know, he dealt with that. But my father would have bottled up his feelings and never would have spoken about it. And then I think as time went on, it was just a ticking time bomb. He never dealt with it. And then, you know, that with the pressure of COVID and lockdown and not being able to see people and not being able to socialise and dance, I think it was all just a bit too much for him. They all play a factor, but, you know, during, let's say, the first lockdown, where, let's say, the farmers would meet maybe once or twice a week at something like the mart or something else to do with farming, that was all taken away. So men who were isolated or who felt they were alone and couldn't speak to anyone, now their only lifeline, whatever it was, maybe was taken away and they're in lockdown. And then I think it just kind of all, you know, got a bit too much for some people, especially probably for Dad. That's maybe what happened.
Was he a sociable man?
He was, yeah, very sociable. Like, he would have loved going down to Kinsale, like, once or twice a week, have a few pints, have a few, a bit of a dance. And then I feel like once that was taken away, and you couldn't do that, it just kind of, it's just a knock-on effect that people don't realise about, maybe, you know, like, COVID and the lockdowns.
Yeah. What impact has his death had on you and the people left behind?
Well, it's fairly heartbreaking. Like, you know, you're left to deal with the answers that you're never, or the questions that you're never going to get an answer to, like why he did it. And then you kind of think in the back of your mind, is there anything I could have done to prevent this? And there's a bit of guilt, and, you know, and you think, oh, how come I didn't notice anything, or why didn't he say anything? But those, I think, are just natural, it's a natural part of the whole grieving process. But, like, dealing with, you know, we all came together, we dealt with the farm, and, like, we cleaned up the farm, we sorted out the cattle, we looked out for each other. But, like, the loss that he's left behind with us, you know, it'll stay for the rest of our lives. And it's something that will never go away.
Do you have any regrets that you didn't speak to him maybe a few days beforehand? You were in Canada, I believe.
I was in Canada, yeah. I actually called him. I had a Zoom call with him about a week and a half before he passed away. And I sent him, I don't know why I did this, I can't remember the reason, but a food shop from Kinsale, just delivered it to the house. And then when I found out he took his own life, it was kind of like, what? It was a shock. But like, yeah, I wouldn't have spoken to him much while I was abroad. But I wish I had spoken to him more. Yeah.
What do you say to people that are listening to us now that feel that they need some sort of help, and but they're maybe too proud or too shy or too scared to share their problems with somebody else?
I would say find someone they trust, someone they really trust, whether it's a family member, a friend or a neighbour, or ring an anonymous helpline. You know, like Samaritans or Peter House, or ring someone where they don't know who you are. And if you're, you know, if you're afraid of naming yourself or whatever it is, or shame or whatever, just ring someone either you can trust or ring someone anonymous, because there is help out there. Like, just there are people who want to help. It's their job, and like, you're not weak for doing it, so reach out to people.
And by speaking to us here today through difficult times, because you're still grieving, it wasn't that long ago, maybe it will help other people to deal with what they're going through.
Yeah.
That's your hope.
Hopefully, yeah. Like, I feel like if someone's listening to this, and if, let this be their message to go and actively search for help, speak to someone they trust. As soon as you say it, you will be so shocked at the relief that it has.
And to think about the people left behind, like,
yeah,
yourself.
Exactly. And if you really love those people, you wouldn't want to put them through what our family has been through, or what any other family who have experienced suicide have been through.
Well, Thomas, our condolences to you and your family, and thank you for being so brave to speak to us today on something so difficult and so, I suppose, deep. And as we said, hopefully it will help other people that are listening. Thanks very much.
No problem. Thank you so much.
Yeah, that was Thomas McCarthy talking about his late father, Paddy. He will be speaking along with Emma Picton-Jones from Wales on a live stream next Friday night as part of Ag Mental Health Week. If you need to talk to somebody, the Samaritans are at 116123. That's 116123. You can phone them, or you can email Joe, that's jo@samaritans.ie. And a list of other helplines is at rte.ie/helplines. Now, also taking part in Ag Mental Health Week is researcher Connor Hammersley, who will be sharing the results of his research in an online discussion tomorrow night with young farmers from Canada and Australia. He joins me from his home in Tipperary this morning. Good morning, Connor.
Good morning, Damien. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, tell me about the backdrop to the research work that you have been doing, focusing specifically on farmers.
So farmers in Ireland, I suppose, demonstrate some of the highest levels of adverse health outcomes relative to other occupations in Ireland, and particularly in relation to heart disease, cancers and mental health, and often don't present with health concerns until the issues have reached crisis point, you know, if they even do present with them at all. And what our study looked at was the socio-cultural context that reduces farmers' adaptive capacity, you know, to deal with these issues appropriately. And I suppose what we found was that farmers' commitment to a particular masculine identity, which on the surface was demonstrated through projecting themselves as strong men, suppressing emotions and help-seeking behaviour to avoid being seen as weak or vulnerable. And notably, many of the problems go unaddressed, confessed or and often amplify over time. So ultimately, what we know from our findings is that farmers are too highly represented in national negative health statistics, and there's a big gap in farmers presenting with health issues and help-seeking behaviour. And it's interesting what Thomas said earlier, that, you know, on our findings kind of reflect the, what he suggested also.
Yeah, it's often said that farmers put the farm and their animals first and their own well-being well down the pecking order.
Yeah, and it's not to suggest that farmers don't need to be or shouldn't be resilient, because they do need to be resilient for the work that they do. But the problem is, you know, when that morphs into how they relate to health and help-seeking behaviour and how they perceive themselves to be viewed within their community, and that's when it can become a problem. You know, I remember as one wife of a partner said to me when I was conducting the study, you know, that my husband is always the first person, you know, to offer help and support, but the last person to seek it themselves. And I suppose it's the thing for farmers to extend that support and empathy that they show for their livestock, their farm, their family and their community, and extend that support and care to themselves. Because ultimately, without their own health, you know, the farm, which they can give so much time to, is nothing.
Yeah. Now, there were always pressures associated uniquely with farming as opposed to other businesses. You know, there's price fluctuation, there's the weather, there's cross-compliance with EU regulations. But you were telling me during the week that there are new pressures now, particularly from the continuous changing of regulations to online criticism of farmers.
Yeah, so I suppose farmers are, you know, there's, you know, there's, as you said, there's not much more regulation in farming coming as a product of environmental concerns and environmental regulation. And then farmers are also subject to, you know, the international market and their produce being provided for the markets. And often those two variables can be at odds with each other, and the farmer is caught in the middle of that. And, you know, whether they're right or wrong, farmers need to be, I suppose, more supported in how they adapt to these changes that are going on in farming, both from, you know, a practical point of view, but also from a mental and emotional point of view in dealing with some of these new challenges that are now being presented to them within farming. And I suppose just added to that point then, you know, there can be self-representations of farmers as independent and autonomous, but now with more regulation in farming, the degree to which farmers can exert their own independence and autonomy on the farm is reduced due to regulation. So, you know, that's kind of a corrosive message to farmers, you know, in terms of identity.
All right. We're going to wrap up now, but just very briefly, tell me a little bit more about the On Firm Ground programme.
So the On Firm Ground program that my project is basically part of a wider project that's a cross-departmental initiative between the Department of Health and Department of Agriculture, which looks to train up agricultural advisors in Ireland, you know, to equip them with the skills to be able to open the conversation with farmers in relation to their health, and not to be health professionals, but to try and be a bridge or a network between the farmer and local health services, and just try and normalise you know, health topics and conversations, including mental health,
sure,
into routine interactions with farmers. And the broader aim of the project is that would be rolled out with, you know, the wider farming community and people who would interlink with farmers,
yeah,
in terms of agri-banking, veterinary occupations and even cooperative staff as well.
All right. Well, Conor Hammersley, thank you very much indeed. You will be taking part in Ag Mental Health Week, which begins tomorrow. All details are on Twitter and Facebook at Ag Mental Health Week, a brave initiative by farmers Peter and Paula Hines for the global farming community. And remember, there is always help and there are always people willing to help out there.
Countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal, bringing you expert analysis on what the new CAP deal means for you and your farm payments.
Now, Tuesday is everyone's favourite day on Joe Kelly's organic farm in Carradine, County Mayo, because that is the day that Owen and Val help out. These young men are service users from Western Care Association who visit the farm through Social Farming Ireland. By joining in on the everyday work of the farm, they hope to make friends, pick up skills and build their confidence. Katie Flannery went along to see how they were getting on, and she began by meeting Owen's mother.
Hello. I'm Stephanie Coffey from Ballyhaunis. My son is coming here, Owen, to Joe for the last few months. Absolutely loving it. Didn't think he would like it as much. I know I didn't like picking spuds or weeding carrots when I was that age. We'd avoid it like the plague. But what you call it, he's absolutely loving it. Sure, Joe's just so down to earth, so natural with them, has great rapport with them, comes home and tells me all the stories and who's working here for the summer with them, especially the girls. He does be telling me all about them. One girl, Rebecca, she's from Donegal, I think. I got the full rigmarole a couple of months ago about her. I'd say there might be an old twinkle in the eye there for her. Yeah, because I've heard more about her now than anyone else. But like, I've seen the difference in him, you know. Just, he's flourished in the last, this year, above any year, you know.
And so they're yakon, they're a tuber, so kind of like a potato. They grow under the ground, and what we see is
so
the
I'm Rebecca, and I'm in here along with Val and Brenna, and we're harvesting the fine beans. So pick them off like that. That one's actually probably a bit far gone now, like they can be harvested a little bit smaller than that. But yeah, as you can see, there's plenty of vines here, so it takes a few hours, you know, to do it, yeah. There's another field where we'd weed a lot. There's carrots and parsnips there, and there's spuds to be dug there as well. And kind of on a wetter day, we'd be in the tunnels more so, harvesting stuff. Like Val and Owen would harvest maybe the fine beans and tomatoes and stuff, and we'd water a lot as well. We'd go around the tunnels watering a lot as well, so. Yeah, and the chickens and ducks have to let out in the morning as well, so. For myself, like, it's definitely my favourite day on the farm. I think it's just nice to have extra people, you know, and familiar faces as well, because they are coming every week. I hope Val and Owen are getting something out of it. I think they are. Like, I think they enjoy the day. We all go in together and have soup together at lunch. That's kind of our routine now. We just relax as well. So yeah, I think that's probably a good part of the day as well. I'd say they enjoy that and kind of chatting and stuff. Like, yeah.
Hi.
Hello, Owen. How are you?
And what are you doing?
Oh, planting, actually.
Very good. You're watering the plants, are you?
Yes.
And what are these plants?
Oh, these are peppers, and they're too spicy.
Too spicy. And what else are you doing here today?
Oh, I'm planting all of these.
My name is Annette Duffy. I'm from Primrose Hill Western Care in Clamara's Day Service. We're here on Joe Kelly's organic farm here in the beautiful Carradine on a beautiful, lovely day. Lovely, lovely morning. So I'm here supporting Val Hughes. The last couple of years, Val has just enjoyed coming down here on the Tuesday mornings. So he loves coming down to see Joe, and they have a great bit of banter and giving out about Mayo football and farming and where the world is being put to right by the two of them. They just get each other. Joe is just, he's one of the nicest people I have ever come across, and he listens. So when you come here to Joe's farm, it's not about disability. Nothing says social farming is about somebody with disability. Val just gets on and does what everybody else is doing here on the farm, whether it be picking potatoes, pulling carrots, whatever, even in the early springtime, whether they're setting the seeds or whatever, Val just gets stuck in with Joe, and they just make a lovely couple, really, because they just get on so well together. And anybody that has been here, any other participants that have been here with Joe, they all say the same thing. He just gets everybody. It's just that you're welcomed. You're part of the farming community, really. There is no disability here. It's only what you're able to do.
Oh, the right bell since day one. The right bell. Maybe even before day one. Well, it's comfortable. What I'd call it's very comfortable between us. I'd hear what he'd be saying when he's not saying it even. I think he knows what I'm thinking sometimes.
That's dangerous.
Well, I think he knows a lot more than what I'm thinking. I think he knows what a lot of people think, but he doesn't let on. What? How are you today, Val? You were? You were working away all day. Yeah, which tunnel were you in? The beans. Are you picking French beans? My name is Joe Kelly, and I'm farming a small area of land here in Carndyne, County Mayo. Social farming was something that started here. The idea of social farming came up where a guy mentioned to me that he'd seen it in the Farmer's Journal, and he thought it was something that he thought it'd suit this farm, a friend of mine. And I didn't know what it was, and he said he cut out the piece in the Farmer's Journal and brought it to me, and he sat down in the house here one night, and we talked about it, and I thought I'll look at the idea. And yeah, we had three people the first time that we did it, and it's been a revelation, actually, because I didn't know much about it for a start, and I've learned a lot from the people that's come here. It's been very effective, actually, for us, as well as I hope it is for them. Yeah, I've learned a lot about life and how different people think and what is important in the world to different people. Most days, whatever way God plans it, that we're here, it's a fine day. It's very, very rare we have a wet day. So yeah, and we have a break then after a couple of hours being here, and I make a big pot of soup from stuff I grow here on the farm, and we have some they bring their own sandwiches, and we sit down and we have a banter, and all love tea. Everyone loves tea. So tea is a great winner altogether. And then we'd have a bit of apple tart, and if I could get someone to bake a tart or someone, if I had time to bake it, I don't bake many tarts myself, but yeah, and a cup of tea again, like just to break it up. And that was a great winner, especially with Val. Pie. He could say the word pie. He might be nonverbal, but pie didn't miss him. Mighty man for pie. And yeah, it's been a revelation, really, around the place, because it changes the atmosphere, and what it's about shifts a little bit. The working farm continues as normal. Everything gets done. The orders have to be got out one way or the other, because you have to pay the bills and keep going. But the guys when they come, they're just a different energy.
Well, that was Joe Kelly from Carndyne in County Mayo talking to Katie Flannery. And if you're a farmer interested in learning more about social farming, or you think that you might enjoy the programme yourself, you can find out more on www.socialfarmingireland.ie, or you can email Deirdre Fahey at dfahey, that's F-A-H-E-Y, at southmayo.com. And thanks to Deirdre and Noreen for introducing us to Joe and all his farmers. Now, my next guest is one of the most influential people in Irish agriculture. Chagask is the state body responsible for conducting scientific research into farming and advising farmers on how to implement best practice within the farm gate and teaching students about farming in their various colleges. Professor Frank O'Mara is the new director of Chagask, a position he took up only a week or so ago. You're very welcome to the studio. Good morning, Frank.
Thanks very much, Damien.
Good to have you. You grew up on a farm in Tipperary, so I'm sure that gave you a good grounding to where you now find yourself.
Absolutely. A little place called Lisrona near Clonmel in South Tipperary, a small dry stock farm. You know, I come from fairly humble beginnings. And look, I would have loved to have been a farmer, but the farm wasn't big enough, really, I suppose. And my parents had a huge value in education. They never, you know, so they very much encouraged me to go to college. And off I went to UCD. And of course, once I got to Dublin, you know, really loved it up there. I studied ag science, and, you know, stayed obviously involved in agriculture, lectured in UCD for a good few years, actually worked in industry for a couple of years in Charlie Winds in Kildare. Had a great time there as well, learned a lot. But for the last 15 years, I've been back in Chagask, and I've been heading up the research side of Chagask for the last 10 years or so. And now, very privileged position to be in as director of Chagask. You know, yeah. we touch the lives of so many people, so I'm delighted to be there.
Like, you have a big job in hand, and when you were growing up on that small farm in Tipperary, you'll remember, and I don't know, did you ever take part in them, farm protests like we saw all over the country yesterday? We saw them taken to the streets, worried about what their future holds. It's part of your remit to advise farmers to deal with what's coming down the road, Frank, and teach the next generation of farmers in your colleges, as I was saying at the start. How do you manage expectations, and where do you see Irish agriculture in, say, 20 years' time?
Yeah, well, look, Damien, I suppose agriculture is always met with different challenges. You know, back as long as I can remember, there have been challenges facing agriculture. Now, I suppose we have big challenges, as we always do, around incomes and farmer livelihoods. And in particular with CAP reform, that's going to impact very, very significantly on a certain cohort of our farmers. But we have a number of environmental issues that all seem to be coming to a kind of a crescendo at the one time, whether it's water quality or climate or ammonia. So, you know, there's big challenges there. But look, there's also big opportunities. And the way I look at it is, you know, we have a world with a growing population. We've never had as big a population. It's going to grow another couple of billion. So the demand for food is absolutely there. And I think also, you know, very much there's a growing demand for the type of food we produce here in Ireland.
Which so is the demand for beef and dairy growing globally?
Absolutely, absolutely. And in particular, the demand for, I was going to say, for food produced in a family farm setting on grass-based systems, okay, if it's livestock. So the fundamentals are good for our industry.
Yeah, because some of our listeners will be perplexed and they'll be thinking, you know, are we not moving to a more plant-based diet, and should we not be cutting down on meat and milk production and growing more vegetables and growing more trees and rewilding instead in this country? Are those feasible alternatives into the future? Do you see that happening? Do you see the landscape of Irish agriculture changing significantly away from livestock production?
I don't see it changing significantly away from it. I think, you know, Ireland, our competitive advantage in agriculture is livestock production. So, look, that's where I think we're going to remain. We obviously are also have other very important enterprises, whether it's tillage or horticulture. And I'd love to see those enterprises, you know, growing in strength, because I think they have an important role. And I think really for me, it's very important that we have a diversity in Irish agriculture. It's not just a one size fits all industry or a one enterprise. While beef and dairy are our two biggest enterprises and will remain that, in my view, I think it's very important that we have strong sheep, strong tillage, strong pig, a good forestry sector, and as I said, strong horticulture sector as well. And obviously the equine sector is there as well as a very important sector in Irish agriculture.
So you don't see the percentages shifting all that much in terms of dairy, beef, tillage and so on?
Not dramatically, because look, our competitive advantage is actually in growing grass. And so dairy, milk and meat production are going to be our two predominant enterprises, I think, for the future. And even, you know, globally, I actually had a meeting yesterday with the World Wildlife Forum. And, you know, they obviously would take a view that we should have less animals in the world, less animals in agriculture. But I think they agree that the type of grass-based system that we have is actually quite a sustainable system. Obviously, we have issues with regard to greenhouse gas emissions and water quality that we have to deal with. But fundamentally, you're not eating food that other people could eat in a grass-based system. And that's the fundamental of a sustainable system.
Yeah, you mentioned it there. There is a slew of regulations coming down the tracks to make food production more sustainable. And we'll see what the carbon budgets will be, for example. Now, agriculture, it does account for a third of emissions in this country, and the critics are saying, Frank, that not enough has been done to decarbonise in the ag sector. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, well, look, first of all, agriculture is a big part of Ireland's greenhouse gas emissions, and that's just by virtue of the size of the agriculture industry relative to our population. We have one animal, we've over one animal, nearly 1.6 or 7 livestock or bovines for every person in this country. In the UK, they share one bovine between 6 or 7 people. So it's just, we have a big agriculture industry. There's a lot that is being done, and there's a lot more that can be done in relation to reducing emissions on livestock farms. We've just rolled out the Signpost Farm Programme earlier this year. That's a collaboration with all the dairy and meat industry and other partners as well to set up a network of over 100 demonstration farms, farmers' farms that will implement best practice in relation to emissions and other environmental practices while maintaining their production and profitability. And we will use those to demonstrate how we can, move agriculture in the direction that's needed to reduce emissions.
So these are kind of research farms where you'll implement latest research to reduce emissions, and then if it's successful, you share that with other farmers.
Yes, but like they're farmers' farms, and ultimately the farms make the decision. So we will work with farmers, support them to kind of come up with a plan for their farm as to how they can implement the practices that will reduce emissions on their, that's suited to their farm. Because one thing about farming is it's not a one size fits all type industry. Farms have different structure, different soil type, different topography and so on. So you need a localised or a local solution.
Yeah, like a farm in your native county and a farm up in Leitrim or Cavan would be completely different in terms of soil quality and all that.
Absolutely, yeah.
Dairy expansion post-quotas combined with all those recent EPA reports on water quality, as you mentioned, and biodiversity loss lead to the baseline conclusion that something drastic needs to happen to stem these trends. What do you say to dairy farmers, Frank, who borrowed money to expand after quotas were abolished or are planning expansion? Because, as the EPA says, it cannot be a case of business as usual.
Yeah, well, look, I don't think what we're saying now or what I would say now would be different than what we'd say all the time. If you're going to invest money, look, make sure you have a sustainable plan for the future. And the first part about expansion or investment is make sure your current enterprise is running as efficiently as it can. So efficiency before expansion or investment. So, I think we have had a lot of expansion in the dairy industry since mm-hmm. quotas were removed. I think that has been fantastic. And we've seen a lot of people being able to get into the industry for the first time in over 30 years. You know, we had 30 years of milk quotas.
Do we need to slow that expansion down now?
Well, look, I suppose our own projections would suggest that's going to slow down at some stage anyway. You know what I mean? We've projected out how we think animal numbers will go for the next decade or so. And we would see at some stage a levelling off is going to happen in relation to the dairy industry. At the moment, there's still a lot of appetite out there for people to get into it or for people to expand. And we would say that, look, you've got to have a plan around the future proofing of that expansion to make sure that you're doing that in a sustainable manner that's going to fit with the way we'll be farming for the next couple of decades.
But water quality is quite a big issue, though, isn't it?
It is a big issue, and we have to improve our water quality. There's no doubt about that. And there's a consultation period just finished in relation to what measures might be taken on farms, and the department will be finalising their proposals.
That's the nitrates action plan.
Yeah, and I think we have to do a bit more. We can't continue if we continue to do the same. We'll get the same outcome. So we are going to have to look at how we use fertiliser and nutrients on our farms.
Yeah.
And the minister has just asked us to do a review of fertiliser use on farms, and that's in the context of rising fertiliser prices, but also the issues around the impact of fertilisers on the environment.
Yeah. But by the way, when we hear lots of talk about, you know, intensification and expansion in agriculture in Ireland, we sometimes might lose our way and get a picture painted of, you know, factory farming and industrial size farms and all of that sort of thing. What are the statistics on the size currently now of dairy and beef farms in Ireland?
Yeah, so look, the average dairy farm in Ireland is somewhere around 85 dairy cows.
85.
Yeah. So, you know, in an international context, that's quite small. You know, you go to our most similar grass-based country, New Zealand, the average size there is probably 350 to 400. You go to America and, you know, you can find indoor intensive feedlot.
And what's the average beef farmer?
The average beef farm, suckler farm, probably has about, 15, 16, 17 suckler cows. So they're quite small in scale in an international context. And, you know, even the intensity or the average stocking rate on Irish farms is low by international standards.
Okay, and just when you say that dairy farms, you know, they seem to be the ones that are expanding. They're the ones that are profitable. It's the business to be in if you want to make money as a farmer. Suckler farming, completely the Cinderella industry, it seems, of Irish agriculture. What future is there in that sector?
Look, I think there's a very strong future for suckler farming in Ireland. It's a very important industry. We have about 70,000 suckler farmers in the country. They're in every parish of the country. They produce a very high quality product. There's a lot of demand for that product. And certainly, yes, look, suckler farming, it's challenged by profitability, but it's a very resilient sector. And, you know, we have an awful lot of suckler farmer clients in our books, and we're there to support them. And I think they're going to be around for a very long time to come.
You mentioned forestry a little bit earlier on. We're so far behind the rest of Europe when it comes to forestation in Ireland. Why is that? And can you try and do something to encourage more farmers to plant more trees?
Yeah, so look, we
and native trees.
We have about 10 or 11% forestry in the country now. When I was going to school, that was about 4%. And, you know, previous to that, we were down around 1% forestry in the country. So while we have low amount of forestry by European standards, we still have a lot more than we had in the past. And look, I think there is an appetite out there for more forestry. There's certainly difficulties around, the regulations around planting and so on that the department are working to mm-hmm. streamline, because the targets are that we would like to see more forestry being planted. And I suppose, look, you know, the reason there's not more maybe is that farmers want to, by and large, they want to produce food. That's the type of farming they want to be involved in. And ultimately, it's their choice. And but anybody that does want to get into forestry, you know, we've got a good service there in relation to providing them information and supports in that.
And what about organic farming? It seems to be the forgotten child as well, that we should be maybe concentrating on pushing a bit more. Would you agree?
Yeah, look, and we have very low level of organic farming in Ireland. And again, I look, for me, one of the reasons for that is we have a small population relative to our food production capability. And organic farming, you know, at least part of the drive for it is, you know, the whole local markets and the close to production type desire that consumers have. And when you're exporting most of your food, then it's hard to get that closeness to the consumer. But look, we have ambitious targets in set by government in relation to organics. The target is to triple it from around 2.5% of our land up to 7.5%. And we're working with organic farmers in relation to that. I suppose it would be an area where we would like to be able to devote more resources to, and we will be doing that over the in the short term to support farmers that wish to get into organics.
All right. Very briefly, Frank, the budget's next Tuesday. You are state funded. Do you need more money to advise farmers and do more research with all that's coming down the tracks?
Absolutely. Look, the challenges are very big, and I think it's going to take investment in order to deal with some of those challenges. We work with whatever resource the government makes available to us at the time. We'd love to have more. I'm sure there's lots of other people looking for more as well. But whatever we get, people can be assured that our advisors and our teachers mm-hmm. and our researchers will continue to do the best that they can to provide a top quality service to Irish farmers and food businesses.
All right. We've only touched the surface there on a lot of issues. But Frank, it's been great chatting to you. I want to wish you all the very best. You're succeeding Professor Gerry Boyle, who's stepping down from the position after 15 years. So maybe you have 15 years ahead of you in this job. Who knows after
Jeez
this?
God.
But anyway, thanks very much, Professor Frank O'Mara, the newly appointed director of Chagas, for dropping by this morning. Well, finally, as the weeks go by, more activities are resuming in towns and villages across the country. Towns like Cappamore in County Limerick, where Thursday night bingo is back at 8:30 in the community centre. Now, they come from all over. COVID certs on one hand, masks on. COVID compliance meant it wasn't a full house, but there was plenty of enthusiasm for the prize pot of €2,300 this week. Brenda Donoghue went along to see how everybody was getting on. So eyes down and away we go.
Everybody settled in. You're all welcome to bingo here in Cappamore this damp evening. Hope you enjoy your night. I hope you win plenty of money. Any two lines for €40, your next number, 8787. All the ones, legs 11, 2929.
Barbara, it's great to see you. I didn't see you in over 2 years.
I know, it's been a long time. But
it's been a long time, yeah.
Hopefully it's going to get better.
So back at bingo, what's your name, where are you from?
Patrick Hickey from Ballinair. Great to be back, and it's a great social thing, show. When I was doing the Zoom bingo at home, we got into it. Yeah. It's good too, but it hasn't the social thing. Brenda, it's great when you're out farming and when you come in dinner and relax, and then you're somewhere to go, like somewhere like bingo, a social thing to do. Hoping to meet all the faces I know. I didn't meet them nearly 2 years here now, like, you know what I mean?
I think I found the most glamorous woman at the bingo tonight. What's your name?
Mary Fabier.
And what's your job here tonight, Mary?
Selling lotto tickets. I love bingo. I love being back at bingo, especially for the friendship.
What was the last year and a half like without this kind of social outlet for you?
My world fell apart. I was very housebound as I'm aging and I had to do what I was told, but I'm so excited to be back right here now playing bingo. I mean, right now I'm a different person to before. I was living in the past. Now I'm living in the present. I'm so thrilled to be back working amongst the friends I adore.
Would you like a lotto?
Yeah. Thank you very much, and the very best of luck.
Hello, you're back at the bingo. What's your name?
Patsy Hoare.
Well, Patsy, what does it mean to be back?
Like winning the lotto, because I missed it so much. I missed all my friends that I met here. I've come here about 20 years.
How was COVID for you? How did you get on?
Very bad. I got very depressed and everything over it. And then I was diagnosed with cancer there in the colon there a few weeks ago, and that made me worse then.
Only a few weeks ago?
That's all. I was delighted that when Bingo came back, because it was something to look forward to good there, you know. It takes my mind off of it, my Bingo.
I wish you the best of health and thank
now,
you.
Glad to be back at the Bingo, yes, and as I said, with the COVID and all that, we had nowhere to go really, and this is the only night we get out for a bit of crack and have a laugh. I myself, my mother is in a nursing home, and I used to be with her all the time, and I'm always with her every day. Like, with the COVID, I couldn't go near her, and I said I was upset, and I still couldn't go to the Bingo, and at least I have the Bingo now. And I can still see my mother, and, you know, it's something to do, something to get out.
I've just come out to the car park in the Cappamore Community Centre, and I see the buses are pulling up. I'm just going to get onto one now. It's the Galty bus hire, and we have a few people on this. Hello, everybody.
Hi.
Are you all glad to be going back to Bingo?
Yay.
Has anybody won a load of money on the Bingo? Who's the good? What's your name?
Josie Deegan.
And where are you from, Josie?
Kilmallock.
And you've won big on Bingo. How much?
7,300 in the hospital Bingo.
What?
About 4 years ago. Well, I came back from England, and after a lot of tragedy in the family, and I met loads of new friends, and every Bingo hall I go to, I know they know me. So it's been lovely, you know, you get a great welcome from everybody.
62, 62, 35. 45 check and 35 1 check.
Now you won. What did you win?
€100.
Well, how does that feel?
Lovely. My first time back after COVID, so I'm delighted.
And what's your name?
Clodagh.
So tell me a little bit about yourself.
I'm living at home and I have a child. She'll be 2 in November, my first baby, so I'm delighted to get out of the house for the first time in the past 2 years. So COVID was a bit hard when I had her, like, because she wasn't allowed to meet anyone, and so it was hard going, but hopefully we'll be out of it and get back to normal.
You're after winning €100.
Yeah.
The interval has been called in the Bingo hall tonight, and John Fabier, I'm grabbing him for a quiet moment. You are the Bingo caller here. How long, John, have you been calling the numbers?
I'm calling numbers approximately 20 years. I might call right numbers, I'll call wrong numbers. Some people will be delighted with what I call. More people will say, where is such a number? When half time comes, they'll say, well, what did you do, number 10, John? I'll say, well, I have that in my pocket now for another while. I like calling it. I'm retired now, and it's an outlet for me. Certainly with the lockdown, people were asking me in the street, when are you opening up the Bingo, John? I said, we can't open it up for another while. If you see tonight the delight on their faces, it's magnificent to see the light on their face. They came up to me especially and they said, thanks very much for having the Bingo back on again.
To be a good Bingo caller, what are the skills you need?
You need to be your own person, and you need to be as cool as a breeze.
25 25 48 48.
I've just noticed that everyone seems to have special Bingo pens. I didn't know there was such a thing. What are they?
They're dabbers.
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 Yeah.
So what we do is, when we see our number, we have a dabber, and what we do is we just dab like that. After that, then you can...
Dab away.
Dab away.
Now, tell me, who have we got here?
Mary O'Brien.
And somebody told me you had more than one child.
Oh, I have too many, I'd say.
How many children have you got?
20, yeah. 20, 14 girls and 6 boys. 4 sets of twins.
So how do you have 20 children and bring them all up?
I can't tell you now. They all rare, one rare, another short. Yeah, it was the way it was mine.
You're some woman. Good luck with the Bingo.
Thanks a lot. Nice to meet you.
Gee, it's great to be back. The night is over. Didn't win anything. But there's always the next night.
And I won 100.
Did you?
I did. I was very lucky. Yeah. Very lucky, you know.
You brought him luck.
You brought me luck. I won 100. Great to be back at Bingo again.
A powerful report there from Brenda Donoghue at the Cappamore Community Centre on Thursday night Bingo session. And she met a woman who has had 20 children. I'm wondering if that's a record. You can contact us if you know of anybody who has had more than 20 children. Thanks to the committee for the warm welcome that they gave us there this week. That's all we have time for this week. Eileen Herron produced, Brian Moss was broadcast coordinator, Kieran Cullen on sound. Coming up after the 9 News playback. I'll talk to you at the same time next week. Bye-bye and thanks for listening.
Countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal, bringing you expert analysis on what the new CAP deal means for you and your farm payments.